Thanks, Tim. Thanks. Good morning, and it's really a privilege to be with you and at this great campus. We enjoyed the service. It was really uplifting to hear the songs and the worship. And Tim, thank you for making this possible. And it was also great to meet with President Rust. I happened to know his uncle, Walter Rust, who used actually to lead tours to Israel, Palestine, and to do lots of archaeology. And every time he would come to Palestine, he would make a stop in Bethlehem. I thought this morning just to maybe share with you a bit about our ministry in Bethlehem, and hopefully in 20 minutes, and then to take a few questions to engage in a dialogue, and we'll see where that will lead. For many of you, this might be the first time, actually, to meet a Palestinian, Arab, Christian, and a Lutheran pastor. I know it sounds like a contradiction in itself, and you might think we are coming from a totally different galaxy or something. And many people actually, they don't know where to put us. And often, actually, when groups come to visit us in Palestine, they still ask me, Pastor, tell us, when did you convert to Christianity? Assuming maybe that we used to be heathens or Muslims who were converted to Christianity by some Lutheran missionaries from the Midwest or so. I know that sometimes you might have the feeling as if Christianity was started, say, in St. Louis or something. sometimes you might have the feeling that Jesus was originally from Texas. But remember, he was born in Bethlehem, Palestine, not Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, right? In fact, I was born across the street from the Church of the Nativity. I mean, literally across the street. So when people ask me, when did you convert? I like to tell them, you know, most probably, one of my grandmas used to babysit for Jesus. So, I mean, just to put things in perspective, I think this might be helpful. So remember, Christianity was started in Palestine, and the Bible, actually, for me, is nothing but a Palestinian product. If you want, the Bible has on the back a stamp that says, Made in Palestine. I mean, actually, this is why early on people started speaking about Palestine being something like a fifth gospel. You know, we have the four gospels, but actually to understand the life and the ministry, but even sometimes the words of Jesus, you need to know the context, the geography, the history, the daily life of Palestine. And in that sense, I think it is very special for us to be in that very place. And so we are Palestinians. Being a Palestinian, unfortunately, in this country, not many people know much about the Palestinian people. But the Palestinian people are actually the people who happened to be living in Palestine throughout the centuries. Sometimes people get that actually confused. I mean, if I were to take my family as an example, most probably, I mean, my family has been living in Bethlehem really since, as far as the record goes. But if I were to go back and do a research, most probably, maybe my forefathers used to be Canaanites, who at some point came to believe in Yahweh as their God. Then Jesus showed up in our country. They believed in him. They became Christian, actually Aramaic Christian. Later, were forced to become Greek Orthodox Christian. This is why my name actually is very Greek Orthodox. Mitri is not a Palestinian name, and it's not a Lutheran name. Mitri actually is a saint by the Greek in the Greek Orthodox Church. And Rahib means monk. Again, there is a strong tradition of monastery in the Orthodox Church. Although I like to think, you know, monk, also I could stand in a very good Lutheran tradition. Remember, Luther was a monk who then at some point decided to leave the monastery. Most probably this is what happened actually to one of my forefathers. So since 100 years, we understand ourselves to be Palestinians. But it's the same people. But the identity kept shifting. You understand my point? In fact, if we were to do a DNA test between King David, you remember he was a Bethlehemite, and Jesus, who was a Bethlehemite, and myself, I'm sure we have much more in common than King David, Jesus, and Netanyahu. Netanyahu comes from an Eastern European tribe who converted to Judaism in the Middle Ages. Unfortunately, often in theology, we are dealt with as outcasts. Because people connect the promises of the Bible with the modern state of Israel with a total misperception. So basically, if I were to talk with Dave, with Paul, Katazarka, according to the flesh, most probably we have more with ancient Israel to do than anyone else. And Katapneuma, according to the Spirit, as Christians, we are God's children. But unfortunately, this story is not known and is not told. So this is why today I thought I will share with you something about this. So, but we are also Arabs. If you come to our worship, like I did now here, you will see that we worship in Arabic. The gospel is read in Arabic, the hymns are in Arabic, the prayers are in Arabic, everything is in Arabic. Except that actually our sanctuary was built by Germans in the 19th century. And everything is written in German. And if you look at Jesus, you would think he was either from Scandinavia with his blue eyes and blonde hair. Even he has some red hair a bit. So maybe Irish or something. But everything actually else is in Arabic. And unfortunately also, many people in this country, when they hear the word Arab, they think, oh, this equals Muslim. But actually, not all Arabs are Muslims, and not all Muslims are Arabs. In fact, the largest Muslim countries in the world are non-Arab countries, the largest being Indonesia. And then you have, you know, like India, they have 200 million. It's not much, it's a minority, but 200 million, it's a lot. You have other, Pakistan and China has 80 million Muslims. Persia, which is non-Arab. And then comes Egypt, like maybe on the ninth place. So really, not all Arabs are Muslims, and not all Muslims are Arabs. In fact, Arab Christianity is older than Islam. Many people, actually, they don't know that. Maybe you will be shocked to know when the gospel was first proclaimed in the Arabic language. Some people think, oh, maybe 19th century through the German missionaries. Around the year 30 AD in Jerusalem at Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit came on the disciples, they started speaking in tongues. And what were the languages they started speaking in? German was the first, right? Danish, Swedish, Norwegian, at least as Lutherans we might think so. But remember, actually, if you read that story, one of the languages mentioned last is Arabic. And for us, it's very important to make sure that the gospel will continue to be proclaimed boldly in that language. That this movement that started in Pentecost will continue to go on. And you might not believe it, but actually the first book of systematic theology, I'm not sure if we have here professors of systematic theology, but the first book of systematic theology in Arabic was written in Bethlehem, in the Bethlehem region, already in the 9th century. Like almost 400 years before Thomas Aquinas wrote his in Latin. Imagine, there was a book of systematic theology in Arabic. Because at that time, the Christians of Palestine were shifting from Aramaic and Greek into Arabic. And so it is very important for us that the gospel today is and continue to be preached in this language. Now, we are Lutherans since 160 years, more or less. Again, thanks to German missionaries who came. And they ended up actually attracting mainly Greek Orthodox Christians to become Lutherans, mainly through education, through the schoolwork that they started. In fact, my grandfather went to Lutheran school, and this is how he became Lutheran back 1868. So this is something about our history. If you come to Palestine today, and if you come to Bethlehem, the little town of Bethlehem is, first of all, a real place with real people. We have around 40,000 people living there. But it is a town surrounded today by, from three sides, by a 25-foot-high wall, concrete wall. So it's like the little town actually is becoming a big open-air prison. And Bethlehem is actually more or less, it's under the Palestinian Authority, but it's still under Israeli occupation because everything outside the walls is controlled by Israel. Israel, they have the keys to those doors in the wall. And it is very, very difficult, actually, even to travel within the country, but also outside the country. Also, this story of the Israeli occupation is unfortunately not very well known in this country. You know, listening to the news this week, and because, you know, of the Palestinian statehood issue, there is almost every day something in the news. But I don't recognize anything there in the news from what is really happening there. If you sometimes hear the news, you might think that the Palestinians are occupying Israel and not the other way around. And, since this occupation is the longest ongoing occupation in modern history, since 44 years. And this occupation was supposed to end 1999, after 5 years of intense negotiations. It didn't. Then President Bush Jr. came and said, in 2 years there will be a Palestinian state. He is not anymore in office, and there is no Palestinian state yet. Last year, exactly during this week, President Obama stood up in the UN and said, next year, hopefully, we'll have a new state joining the UN, meaning Palestine. This week, he is going to veto it. In that sense, actually, you feel we are living still like at the time of Jesus, when the Romans were occupying Palestine. Palestine is still occupied, but it's occupied today by a country called Israel. And in that sense, if we were, so to say, the connection with ancient Israel as Palestinians, the state of Israel today is in connection with Rome of the time of Jesus. Once you start reading the Bible like this, the Bible will make a totally different sense than what we used, the way we used to read it. And so I'm very much involved in developing a theology, how to read the Bible, actually, from a Palestinian Christian perspective. And it's fascinating, because when you read it like this, you might have the feeling as if it were written just now for this context, for this people. The issues are still almost the same since 3,000 years. Let me maybe share with you just towards the end something about our ministry. You know a bit maybe who we are. Christmas Lutheran Church, as I said, was started 160 years ago. 16 years ago, we felt God was calling us to reach out to the entire population. It's not enough to work within the walls of the church. Sometimes I think as pastors, we feel so comfortable inside the walls. And we felt the Lord was saying, you have to go out, you have to reach out. Because still, people in Palestine still are like sheep without the shepherds. And what they really need is a shepherd. They need a vision. They need leadership. But also, they need somebody to empower them. And so we started with this outreach ministry, very interestingly. I still remember when we started 1995, we started more or less as a one-man show. At that time, I was the man and I was the show, so to say. And within these 16 years, the Lord has been blessing this ministry beyond our understanding, so that today, actually, we developed to become the third largest employer in the Bethlehem region. We have around 100 people working. We have around 2,500 members in the outreach ministry, and we are reaching to around 60,000 people every year through the different programs we have. What do we do? Actually, our mission statement is very easy: continuing Christ's ministry of preaching, teaching, and healing in his homeland. These are the three aspects of our ministry. Actually, this is what Jesus decided to do under Roman occupation. He just went from one village to the other, doing something very boring. preaching, teaching, and healing. I was sharing this morning, and we have here a few board members and area reps, and I still remember with Peter, one of our board members here, we had this discussion 5 years ago about what is the best way to do things. And for me, imagine Jesus could have actually opted to spend his life negotiating with Caesar and Herod. He chose not, because his mission was something totally different. And we want to make sure that this mission that Jesus started there will really continue, because it would be really sad, it would be a shame if Christianity will cease to exist from the land where it's all originated. And so preaching, teaching, and healing is the business we are in. Let me say just a few words about these, few of them, and then we can start the dialogue. Preaching, the good news that we are saved by grace through faith, is needed in Palestine today more than ever. Because till we live in a context where people might think that they can earn their salvation by what they do, how they dress, what they drink or refrain from drinking, and what they eat. And often people come to me and say, Pastor, you always preach about grace and faith, but there is no one doing so many projects like you. I said, it's exactly right. Because we know that the main thing was accomplished by Christ himself on the cross, we don't need anymore to worry about the main thing. That is taken care of. So we have time to do all of these projects while everyone else around us are busy earning their salvation. This is why they don't have time to do anything for the town. So, preaching, teaching, education is what we can offer our people in Palestine, because we are a very productive society in terms of kids. 55% of our population are under 18 years old. And we felt a strong call to start actually the first college in the Middle East that focuses on the arts. Art, media, communication, film, dance, theater. I mean, think, what is church without hymns or without art or without communication? And so we started this college 5 years ago. Yeah, 5 years ago. We have right now around maybe 300 students. And it's not just to give another degree, because we have in Palestine many universities. Actually, what we are interested in is to educate the future leadership of Palestine. That is what we are really interested in. And because I think that the mess we are in the Middle East has to do with lack of leadership. By the way, not only in the Arab world. Israel has as big problem of leadership as the Arab countries. This is why Israel has never been as isolated as now under Netanyahu, even if Netanyahu will get 26 standing innovations on the hill. He gets that actually because, you know, if he will go to any college in the States, he will not get one. It's only on the hill that he gets that. Because people on the hill, they need the money to be reelected. It's sad, but this is the story. So really training the future generation of leadership, visionary leadership, skilled leadership, leadership who can communicate our story positively. This is actually what the college is all about. And last but not least, but also education, you know, we have a program for continuous education. Many of our programs are put on satellite, so all people in the Arab countries and the Arab Spring, they can see them, etc. And last but not least, ministry, continuing Christ ministry of healing. And especially our focus is on preventive health, on preventive medicine. So education, awareness building. But also, for example, at our center we have, right now we are the champions, the national champions for female soccer. Yeah. So our team is the national champion in female soccer. So that's also part of the ministry, because it is also important to empower the women of Palestine to reach to new heights in our context. So, you know, if you would have asked me 16 years ago when we started this outreach ministry, if I could ever have imagined to be where we are today, most probably I would have laughed like Sarah when she was told she's going to be pregnant with 90. But the Lord has been blessing this ministry beyond our understanding. And believe it or not, I think we are just warming up. We are just starting. And there is still a long way to go, but this is why God wanted us to be there in Palestine, among the Palestinians, with the Palestinians, and this is why he wanted us to be now in the most difficult situation. So thank you very much for inviting me to be here.
Questions. They're right here.
Can you speak to the being in a such a pluralistic environment where there's so many different almost militaristic religions? You talked about teaching people that their freedom has been earned for them rather than they have to earn their freedom. Contrasting that with scandalizing the weaker brother, has that been an issue?
I'm not sure that I understand your question.
For instance, you have so many different types of religions there. There's
right. You know,
the Muslims,
Judaism, Islam, yeah.
And they have very strict codes as right. far as what they can do. How does that play out in the Christians that you have in your church, that how they interact and how they... even incoming people, you know, that used to be Muslim and that sort of thing, how they adapt to now being a Christian, understanding justification.
Yeah. Justification is not something easy to understand unless you are a Lutheran. In fact, as I said, our members mainly used to be Christians, Greek Orthodox, who became Lutheran out of the education. But I think this message of justification by faith is so important. I think this is my personal, we debate this often in the Arab world, and some people disagree with me, but again, this is what I think. I think right now the Arab world are in a spot to some extent very similar to Europe before the Reformation. And I think that the Arab world is waiting actually now for someone to question the religious law as being the way forward, if I might put it in a bit secular terminology. I think this is where we are right now. I think the struggle that is going on with the Arab Spring is exactly, you know, struggling with this issue. Because, you know, it is very important. You cannot think of a new reality as long as you are captured by religious law. And, you know, once you start operating with the religious law, you will not be able to do anything new, you know? I mean, you can see it with, for example, how the woman dresses. When I grew up in Bethlehem, we didn't have one single Muslim woman with a veil, for example. But once you start operating with this religious law, okay, to be kosher as a woman, what should you show or not show? And then if you operate with the law, you start competing with each other. So somebody will say, okay, the main thing is the hair. Oh, no, the other will say, no. Because the cheeks can be as seductive. So we have to, you know. Oh, no, not enough. The eyes are the most seductive. So they have to, you know, close the eyes. Then the nails are very seductive. And then suddenly you see women just... And it has no end, because if you operate with this law, and I think the Arab world is waiting for someone to come and question that, not necessarily from a Christian perspective, although this is, but from within the Muslim tradition to say, you know, this is not the way forward. This is like, it's a secular, but I think it's important. And I think we have there a very important role to play without imposing. It just, you know, putting the question there is very important. For example, right now we are engaged in a big research on religion and state. That is a very important aspect. We don't want any religious state. I mean, there has to be separation. Otherwise, we cannot move forward. So, you know, so these are the questions, actually, that I think, you know, so for me, as a Palestinian Christian and as a Lutheran, I don't want to, I think in the Western world, in the Lutheran tradition, people narrowed Luther just to fit within the walls of the church. I would like to see some of these teachings actually relevant for the society at large. Now, here you came to take all of these for granted. In our part of the world, we are not there yet. So these are some of the issues we are dealing with. Please. Yeah, actually, it's interesting. We don't. I mean, the aim of the diaconical work we do is not to make people Lutherans, because for me that is actually you make out of the people objects, and in the gospel, people are not objects. It's actually empowering them to become subjects, And so that is the transformation we are interested in. But people know that we are a Christian organization. In fact, when we started the center, I still remember we were attracting lots of women, Christian and Muslims, and we were worried, would Muslim women come actually and participate in our programs? We were shocked to see actually their husband wouldn't allow them to go often to a secular organizations because they are afraid what might happen there. But a Christian setting was seen and is being seen as a safe space. For me, this was extraordinary, you know. And it's for me, this is really our mission, is to provide safe space for people to discover actually what God has intended for their lives. And I can share with you some extraordinary stories. We had one of our students, for example. She comes from a refugee camp. She is Muslim. She was part of the documentary film. And she had she was covering her hair. She's young, maybe I would say 25. You know, with women, you never know how old they are. So let's assume 25. She is divorced, has one child. A divorced woman in the Arab world, very difficult situation, with a kid, without good education, without income. Anyhow, she came to our college. And it was interesting. The last day of college, when we had our graduation ceremony, she came, and everyone was shocked, from the teachers, from the administration, from that her hair was just, she didn't have anything covering her hair. And she came very proud for graduation. And now if you see her, she doesn't anymore wear, for example, a head cover. And we never talk about this in the college because, you know, people can choose to live how they like. But it was interesting when we engaged with her later and we said, you know, why? She said, you know, at this college, I discovered a space where I felt I'm safe. And if I'm safe, I don't need this. And in fact, now she's actually working at our center in a civic engagement program, training future leaders from all over the West Bank, 200 of them. She is coordinating that project. So it is really, I mean, it is unbelievable the transformation that happens there. But again, not in this. I think in often this people here narrow things down to an extent. I would like to see the gospel actually as Paul says, the dynamis goddess to set people free and to set them free in a holistic sense. I think this is what, if you want, this is what our real mission is, setting people free.
I hate to cut you off.
No, it's okay. I want to give
I
also...
I want to introduce back
yeah.
here.
Would you like or
yes.
should I?
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Let me introduce to you our vice president here in the U.S. of Bright Stars of Bethlehem, Beth Nelson Chase. She joined us a few years ago, but actually when we started... coming to the States. At that time, she was working with Wheat Ridge Ministries. And this is how we met at that time. And now she is running the office, the show, everything here in the States. Beth, please.
Thank you.